censorship continues. Alright, so we just went through all this song and dance about how we don't have any stories where the gods do harm or change a lot. And then we get a bunch of stuff about how they shouldn't, these stories that we're going to use to educate the guardians shouldn't glorify, what's the first thing? Our guardians to be, among other things, need them to be courageous. So we're going to cut out all the stuff where gods and heroes are afraid of the underworld or lamenting their own or other people's deaths as if it's some great misfortune.
Can you speak up a little bit?
It's a weird section. I don't really know what to say about it. We don't want our guardians to be cowards, so we're gonna remove all the stuff from the stories they're gonna hear that might lead them to think that gods and heroes are cowards. Okay. Sure. And then we get all these passages that we have to cut out, and then we get another set of passages devoted to another thing, which is
moderation,
exactly. Why do we want the guardians to be moderate anyway?
Desires. I'm gonna. This will make you feel right at home, even though Larry's gone. You got a soul. You got all these parts. And what's in moderation? It's a bunch of desires, a bunch of ends that you want to pursue. But those ends are stuff you want. They're out here. which is a problem in itself, having external goals. But at the same time, too, like, the immoderate person is pulled in all these different directions. It's just the opposite of the kind of cohesive unity that fairly simple. So, Acts, the passages that show the gods and heroes as immoderate.
What page
are you on? I'm not really.
Because our vision is kind of long, so it's kind of hard to
find it. It is a long section, but I don't want to get into it in detail because bunch of examples. It's like, okay, here's somebody who's being immoderate. Let's cut that out. Here's another one. Let's cut that out. See? Okay, but on page 84, at 392A, he's like, all right, so look, we've dealt with stuff about the gods and heroes, so wouldn't the thing that's left be what has to do with human beings? Clearly, but it's not in our power, my friend, to settle this at present. How's that? Because I assume we'll say that both poets and prose writers speak badly about human beings in the most important respects, saying that many unjust people are happy and just people miserable, that doing injustice is profitable, etc. It's all this familiar stuff. And then he says, look, but we really can't address the content of what these stories are going to say about people. Because then we'll be excluding all the stuff that says that justice is only the benefit of the stronger, and that injustice is better for the individual, and that unjust people are more happier. And that's precisely what we're trying to prove. Right? Then, assuming you agree that I'm speaking rightly, shouldn't I say you've granted what we've been looking for all along? And won't the time for us to agree that one needs to make such statements about human beings be the time when we discover what sort of injustice is, and how by its nature it profits the one who has it, whether he seems to be that way or not? Isn't this bizarre? I mean, isn't that just what we spent a big chunk of book two and the first part of book three doing with respect to the gods and heroes? Assumptions about justice all along, and now we're not supposed to do it with respect to human beings. Well, anyway. Anyway, we'll just let him go. So, what's the point?
Sort of advertise justice as being good for those who practice it, so encourage them to use it.
Well, yeah, in general. But what's the point of this? He's saying, look, we're not gonna limit what we say about human beings to things that portray justice the way we want it portrayed, because that would be begging the question. So we're gonna turn to before, the way in which the stories are told and the songs are sung.
going to turn out that the way in which the stories are told and the songs are sung has a lot to do with this content that we're supposedly going to avoid from present. How might that be the case?
What's the question now?
I'm a little bit confused. We're not going to... We've already talked about the gods and the heroes. So now we're going to talk about human beings. Stories about people. And what kind of stories about people are going to be permissible for the education of the soldiers. But if we limit those stories to stories that portray justice as good for the individual and injustice as bad for the individual, we're going to be assuming a knowledge about justice when the investigation is really about what justice. We haven't concluded the investigation about what justice. We don't know what justice. So what are we going to look at instead of the content? We're going to look at the form. So the question is, what does the form have to do with the content? Why is the form even important if what we're after is raising good guardians, good people? And we've been talking about content all along, telling the truth and always being good and not changing and being courageous and moderate. We've been talking about content, and all of a sudden we're going to be talking about form. Why? What's the relationship between the form and the content that we're after? Why would form be important? Serena?
Well, we might not be aiming at selling any sort of knowledge in these documents, but we might just be aiming for some sort of true opinion on the existence of justice. And for that, the content isn't necessary, it's just the form. If I can somehow convince you that, you know, your desires, these are what you're feeling, and you kind of go with that. If you're the sort of person who's swayed by your desires, the form of whatever I'm saying is going to lead you to the right conclusion, whether or not it's knowledge for me.
Okay, I don't know what true opinion is. And I'm not sure how the form would lead me to the right conclusion. What would be the connection?
I think I might be saying something about rhetoric, this style of speech. Is sometimes you have to aim for not exactly leading people to the truth, but leading people to something that might seem like truth to them.
Why would you want to do that? How would that be effective in creating good people?
It comes to right action.
Yeah, but how?
By telling them that this is how it. This is what's going to benefit them.
Okay, but now it sounds like you're bringing content back in. Talking about what benefits and doesn't. Oops.
Okay. Oh, when he's talking about that, like 393C, is he talking about, like, you know, in terms of form, like, if there's a bad person, you act like the speaker would act sinister, I guess, in order to clue in that this is wrong. Is that what you're talking about? With form, like the way in which he speaks?
That would be an example of one type of speaking. There's two types of forms of speaking. Go ahead.
Is it like his small imitation versus narrative?
Those are the two forms of speaking. We'll have to look at them and see how they play out. But just in general, what's the connection between form and this content that we're supposedly leaving out, the nature of justice?
Yeah. This is the harmony and the love of music sort of mimics the state of the soul.
Yeah, harmony is a good clue. And it has to do with, I mean, it, that will come up. And that's a good way to see it. But just form in general, right? It's some kind of organization. But what we're concerned with is the organization of the city, which is really an allegory for the organization of the soul, or the human being, because it's not just the soul. So we're going to exclude the content and look at the form for now, but in a way the form's going to end up being the content, at least if it's legitimate to suppose what we've been supposing all along, that justice is some kind of order or harmony of parts working together. And it looks like the content is a form. Okay, so we've got two forms of speech, narrative and imitation. And he clearly likes one better than the other. So let's do it. Difference. What's the difference here? You told us the two types of material.
Siri.
What's the difference?
I guess it's like narration. It's just the telling of the story, like the copying of the story without, and the imitation is the same as when you like actually imitate those things. And I guess that's bad, because if you go too far and imitate, like I think it's in, you know, the noises of animals and crashing of waves and stuff like that, that now you're imitating insanity and
okay. What's the problem with imitating
that
all these things?
You get into the habit of it, and that becomes who you are.
That's a possible problem. I think there's a more fundamental problem. Go ahead.
Socrates doesn't want the guardians to imitate something else or represent something else. That's why. That's why he wants like direct something different, rather than having the storyteller like go into a character and pretend to be that character. He doesn't want the guardians to do that. That's very cautious.
Why should the guardians not do that?
Because they have a specific role in society, just like everyone else.
And go on.
Oh, and the specialization like allows each person to lead on one thing and not worry about the rest of being a just society.
Yeah, and if you imitate things, then
you're stepping outside of your specialization. That's bad.
Yeah. Imitation is a sort of a being like something that you're not. If you're being like something that you're not, then even if you're just imitating one thing, you're at least two. You have to be in at least two ways. The way you are and the way the thing you're imitating. So there's a bunch of different ways to imitate. You can imitate bad things like thunder, which, I don't know, makes you like an insane person. But you could imitate good things too, right? And then, in fact, don't you have to? Isn't that what education's all about, is imitating good things? If you're not already knowledgeable, or you're not already courageous, or you're not already a carpenter, don't you have to imitate those things in order to become them? So imitation is bad because it fragments the soul, so to speak. You're not just focusing on the one thing that you are. But at the same time, you have to imitate in order to learn, but presumably what you want to be imitating is, you know, something good.
So now you have to fragment that part of yourself, essentially.
say that? Could you speak up?
Is it that you fragment the bad part of yourself such that the good part can be more complete?
And how would death, how would you fragment the bad part of yourself?
I don't know, if there's a, you know, many different ways of making a pruning knife, and you go about trying to make a pruning knife in so many different ways, according to your, you know, pruning knife, you know, your blacksmith teacher, that if you fragment the part of yourself that, so to speak, fragment, that would go about creating a pruning knife in a way that would create a lesser quality pruning knife.
What is it about you? If you create a poor pruning knife, what is it about you that makes it so that you create a bad pruning knife?
You don't have the knowledge.
Yeah. And if you're lacking the knowledge, then you're lacking what? Yeah, it would seem that you're lacking some kind of completeness of your knowledge. Your knowledge is fragmented in that sense. It's not a whole, complete knowledge. So it's the fragmentation that is really the source of that. Yeah. It would seem that imitation is inherently a kind of fragmentation of the soul. That's just what it is. It's beating what you're not, or sort of being what you're not. Or sort of being what you're sort of not.
Or if you're not knowledgeable, then if you imitate knowledge, then, or someone that is knowledgeable, then you become something that you're not, which was not knowing. I don't think you can become knowledgeable by copying somebody else. You know, certainly for technical skills, you have to copy your master's methods.
You have to learn from them. You can't just look at a master and like know what he does. You have to learn progressively.
Yeah. At some point, there's some imitation going on there.
Is it possible to imitate knowledge? Side question. Something or sort of being something that you're not. So if you're not knowledgeable, you can't even sort of be knowledgeable.
But if you imitate someone who is knowledgeable, that can be a way to learn.
Right. But in that case, you're not really imitating the knowledgeable.
No, that is it. Yeah.
Sure. This could be. Alright, well. So they're gonna have to give up invitation. I guess it's 394E. Consider this then, Adamantus, whether our guardians ought to be adept at imitating or not. Does this too follow from what we said before, that each one person could do a beautiful job of one pursuit and not at many? An imitation, especially imitating well, has to do with being able to do many things well, so they should imitate the one at the bottom of that page. Our guardians need to be craftsmen of the city's freedom in a completely precise way and work at nothing else that doesn't carry over into this. Then there would not be a need for them to imitate at all. If they do engage in imitation, they would need to imitate straight from childhood what's appropriate for them.
people who are courageous, water it, tie a tree, and all that stuff. Okay, then there's at 88, page 88, at the bottom, 396C. We're going to allow some imitation. It seems like we have to, because education would seem to involve imitation. So, I said, if I'm understanding what you're saying, there is a certain form of style and narrative in which someone who's a gentleman in his very being will tell a story anytime you need to tell one. A different form, unlike that one, which someone born and raised in the opposite way would always keep to. So, good people, when they do imitations, imitate the good. Does that make any sense? We're going to allow imitation of good things, but it's going to be the good people who do imitations of good things. Restricting what these kids' stories and behavior.
Does it have any effect on their development here?
Yes, it seems like Socrates kind of wants to trick them into becoming the way he wants them to be. I feel like it's almost sort of similar to the poet or author that imitates rather than narrates, you know. It's almost like the stories are imitating, by censoring them in this way, they're imitating this ideal that we want the guardians to be like, without giving them a chance to sort of discover how they should be by themselves.
Yeah, well, in a way, all stories are imitations anyway, so that's not too bad. Why he's making such a big deal out of all this stuff. I mean, is it really? What's the point of art anyway? What is the point of art?
Did you ask it?
Stuff and leave the good stuff. What's the whole deal about? What's music about? What's music in this sense? The arts.
It's about expression. I guess it's very base level things.
Okay. But lots of things are about expression. To you when you experience art, when you have this human experience convey to you when it's more?
You have an emotional response, as opposed to an intellectual response?
Well, you might have an emotional response, or an intellectual response, or some mix of the two. But you do have some kind of response. And what happens if you're listening to music? Your soul. Yes.
Someone said it before, it's harmony. Yeah, either that or just sometimes what you're listening to, what you're reading, creates something with the soul. And that's what he's worried about.
Yes. What does it create within the soul? Okay, but more specifically, what is the pain in this
one? Emotional reaction.
Maybe. Good idea. Huh? What?
Good idea.
Maybe.
Would it be harming you instead of being makes your soul feel like it's all connected to them? Hearts are connected to them.
It might, if it's harmonious. But if it's harmonious, how's it going to create harmony in your soul? Or if it's discordant, how's it going to create discord in your soul? Okay, you're on the right track. What do you mean when you say reflection? But what kind of connection? I mean, when you watch a movie or listen to music or read a book or what, doesn't the...
Forced imitate. It's like almost like a forced imitation. When you listen to music, like you said, it's almost like you forced a connection between the two of you. It makes you feel like you felt when you wrote it.
Yeah, even more than that. It makes you have the form of the work of art come to be in your soul. Some work of art, in some sense, that work of art comes to exist in your soul.
How is that different from anything else, though? So how is that different than anything else?
Anything else like what?
Not art.
Like experience in general?
I guess.
Well, art is, it's sort of like constant between whoever experiences it. You know, a painting doesn't change when different people look at it. So you have that same bit of art in multiple people's souls.
What about the word creating art? If it's a piece of art, what about creating it? How does that come about? Would that be reflective of your soul?
Yeah.
Would it be like the justice in the justice?
Yeah, sure. And so somebody with a well-ordered soul is going to produce what kind of art?
A well-ordered art.
Yeah. And that's going to look like what? going to be lacking all this stuff that we've just excluded from poetry. Somebody with a well-oiled soul is going to tell stories that don't have all this. Stuff, and they're going to do it in the form of narrative. This imitation is a form of disorder, in a sense, because you have to be split in multiple directions to do it. And it's going to be It's going to involve small variations in rhythm. And if someone gives it a tonal range and rhythm appropriate to its style, when you come close to speaking in the same tone of voice and in one range, and the gods aren't going to do anything, and they're certainly not going to do anything bad. And there's going to be one kind of tuning, or two kinds of tuning. Isn't this supposedly good art gonna suck? It's not gonna be very interesting. Be in the soul as a sort of imitation, but we're going to just look past that. And really, even the experiencing it is a kind of imitation. Your soul takes on the form of this thing that you're experiencing. That's a kind of imitation. But we're going to look past that too. And in terms of how it's done, rhythm, still. Harmony, no, melody, rhythm, melody, and tuning, mode, and those are going to be like the other things, simple and unified. So we're going to get rid of rhythms that change and vary, and we're going to get rid of tunings that have lots of notes in them, and we're going to up with something kind of like military marching music, I guess. Stories where nothing happens. So that just seems absurd. What's the point? How is it not absurd? There's a clue on page 90, 397D. But what are we going to do then? Will we accept them all into the city, or one of the unmixed or the mixed? If my opinion wins out, the unmixed imitator of the decent person. So the imitations are going to be of decency, and they're going to be unmixed, meaning all that stuff we just went through. Simple rhythm, simple style, straightforward narration. But Adamantus, the Vic's sort of imitator, is pleasing too, and the one who's opposite to the person you choose is by far the most pleasing to children and their tutors, as well as to the great mass of people. So he seems to notice this, the kind of art that we're going to be allowing is going to be really dull. It's not pleasant. But that's kind of the point. What is it about pleasant things? If what you take in comes to be, its form comes to be in your soul, and you take it in, then what happens when you take pleasant things into your soul?
Disorders
that have.
It's the same way it disorders it if justice were outside your soul.
Yeah, but in what way? Well, it's definitely going to be imitation in a sense. Yeah, but that's true. But we've already tried to at least minimize that effect by making it really boring. So if we don't make it really boring, then what? What's the deal? What happens when you have a bunch of pleasingness in yourself?
It's like that in moderation, sort of. You pulled in all different directions. Don't have that.
Yeah. It's like in moderation. Because you want pleasant things, right? You want pleasant things. So, in a sense, like, this is kind of absurd, but I don't think we're necessarily, I don't think we need to create it as we're really talking about how bad art is. We need to do away with it. It's talking about desire. In general. It's all the kinds of art that, all the stuff about and in art that we've rejected is all the stuff that's pleasant about it. It's all the stuff we like about it. It seems like this whole kind of is really pointing towards this kind of a scenario. His brief statement of what the whole point of all this censorship regime is, which is at the bottom of page 92. And by the dog, I said, without noticing it, we've been making the city pure again, that we just claimed was living in luxury. That's the point. Kind of purification.
From what their purpose is, which is being a philosopher, watchdog, because all the pleasurable parts of the arts will drag their desires in different directions and distract them from other purposes. And then, I guess, since the guardians, I'm assuming from what I remember, are supposed to represent like the spirit part of the soul, like you have three parts of the soul. And so I guess he's kind of implicitly here, since they haven't gotten to the whole philosopher king stuff yet. I guess the rulers would be like taking away all this pleasurable stuff in the arts. Okay, what am I trying to say here?
I was just wondering.
Well, like what you were talking about like getting to the form of the art being fed to them. I mean, it's basically like giving them philosophy. It's giving them. It's like getting down to raw arguments and so forth.
Well, I don't think so. We are talking about stories and music. I mean, this is also babies, right? And little children who were educated this way. And not just the guardians, but everyone.
Right, but it's not technically a political discourse as much as it is about the soul of the individual.
The Republic, you mean? Oh, yeah.
So,
definitely.
So it's like using the rational faculty that you have to cut out all the crap that distracts your spirit or your emotional side or something, so that you can, I don't know, focus somehow on being good.
Yeah, basically. We don't know what justice is. That's been on the table since the get-go. But we recognize we don't know what justice is, and in recognizing that we don't know what it is, searching for it becomes an end. We suddenly have an end where it looked like all the possible ends we could have were going to result in kind of disharmony to somebody. Now we have an end in that we recognize the need for some end that we can have that's not going to be distinct from the activity of pursuing that, right? We still don't know what that is.
So is he just pursuing it in a negative way, like trying to get rid of what he supposedly knows is not what justice is?
Sort of. If we have this goal, pursuing this thing that we don't know what it is, can we really directly pursue it? I don't know what it is yet. I can build a house because I know what it is, and I can pursue it brick by brick or whatever because I see it materializing and I know what to expect. Justice. I don't know what justice is. It seems like, I don't know what all we can do to seek it yet, but it seems that the first thing we have to do is get rid of the stuff that's going to get in the way. And what's definitely going to get in the way? Whatever it is that makes it impossible for me to work with myself and work with others and pursue any goal. I need some kind of self-cohesion to pursue any goal at all. So it strikes me that the best thing I can do first is get rid of the stuff that's going to be an impediment. And what would that be? Rock and roll. Etc. You know, all this stuff. Okay. Notice that whatever is pleasurable, we're going to want it. So good.
Do you put out everything that you desire to you?
Yeah.
So you can't really have a moderation if it's not existent in the first place.
Yeah. I feel
it. Because then you wouldn't really have anything in moderation. You'd always aim for that.
Aim for what?
Aim for something. Maybe a job. To be the best. Like even justice. To be as just as possible. Let's go against the whole moderation. I don't.
Yeah, except for that justice is somehow different from the other things that we desire. We still have to see how that plays out. But it's really the desires that are the problem. So, you know, the first city, everybody just eats acorns and sits around it. They don't really want anything. And they don't have any art. They don't have any entertainment. They just.
So it's just fulfilling your basic need. Back to the fulfilling your basic need.
Even that's a compromise with desire. The ideal
right.
God, Zeus or God or whatever, would really just sit there contemplating the good. Nothing. We're contradictory beings. We're going to have desires, but we can try to minimize them. And how do you do that? Train your soul not to want this. And having all the these pleasurable experiences.
That's what makes it bad.
Makes you want those things that feel good. But if you want those things that feel good, then you're not doing your job, whatever that happens to be.
So he's definitely ruling out that justice can be pleasure. Because what if you're aiming to be just and that's what's pleasurable, that's what's desirable.
Intrinsic too, but at the same time.
You know, it's gonna depend on how